Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in, the one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
I don't think I have anything to prove at this stage in my career. I am who I am. I do what I do. I get buckets. I try to get in the lane and make plays for others. And I think it's pretty well known that I am a very good basketball player. I'm just trying to become elite. And it's not about proving people wrong or anything like that. I'm just trying to prove myself right. The league changed its rules ahead of the 21-22 season in order to discourage offensive players from making overt, abrupt, or abnormal basketball moves. And I must agree, these changes have helped the game. I think it's a more pure form of basketball, similar to kind of the blacktop. You have to really have skill, and I'm enjoying this. The NBA recently released their top 75 greatest players of all time. I had a teammate and former teammate make that list. There's a reason why these types of players get these types of rewards, and I'm happy to see them be honored in that way. Welcome to the Pull Up Pod, episode number 124. It's currently Tuesday, October 26th. And on this date, October 26th, 1984, Michael Jordan, Charles Barkley, and John Stockton all made their NBA debuts. Between them, they have 32 All-Star appearances, 33 All-NBA selections, 6 MVPs, 9 finals appearances, 6 championships, and all 3 of them made the NBA's top 75 all-time. And if you haven't noticed, all 6 of those championships belong to His Airness, a.k.a. Michael Jordan. As we record this podcast, we're fresh off a shellacking that we took in Los Angeles against the Clippers. Not our best moment, but it's a long season, so we're looking forward to our game on Wednesday against the Memphis Grizzlies. Week one is basically in the books. I feel good about how the week went. I think we competed. Obviously, tough opening loss to the Sacramento Kings. We dug ourselves in a hole, but fought back, ended up losing by 3. Had a nice, well-rounded team win against the Phoenix Suns in game 2. And as I said before, a tough loss against the Clippers, in which we turned the ball over 30 times, didn't look like ourselves, step slow. We played against a desperate team who had more of a sense of urgency than we did, and that's no excuse, but we got to be better, and we will be better because that was embarrassing. Personally, I've been playing pretty well, been aggressive. I'm in great shape. I had a really good summer where I didn't have to rehab. I was able to work on my game, work on my body, and kind of come in understanding what I wanted to accomplish. And the last few seasons, I really just focused on getting off to a good start. And last year, I was off to a great start, my best start in my career. And I suffered a foot injury, and that kind of, hurt me throughout the rest of the year as I had to, go through rehab during COVID and actually returned in 8 weeks. But I wasn't the same mentally, and I wasn't the same physically. But that's in the past now. That's water under the bridge, and I'm ready to go. And I'm showing that I'm ready to go. I think I've been aggressive. I'm getting up a lot of threes, a lot of quality threes, getting to the basket when I feel like it. And the game is coming easy. And defensively, I've been engaged, active hands, good in pick and rolls, good on the ball, trying to get contest every time, and just trying to play a well-rounded game to help put us in the best position to win. I don't think I have anything to prove at this stage in my career. I am who I am. I do what I do. I get buckets. I try to get in the lane and make plays for others. And I think it's pretty well known that I am a very good basketball player. I'm just trying to become elite and remain elite throughout a full season. And it's not about proving people wrong or anything like that. I'm just trying to prove myself right, understanding who I am and what I'm capable of as a basketball player and just doing it every night. In terms of early indicators for not only myself, but my team, a lot of things I look at, you know, as I'm watching basketball and as I'm breaking down film, I think it's one, are you competing every night, right? Are you diving for loose balls? Is the team connected? Are they helping each other up when someone falls? Bench decorum, like how do the guys look that don't play? How do the guys look that do play? Are they connected? Are they as one? You know, those are the things I'm kind of looking at. And then obviously strength of schedule matters, who you're playing against and how you're playing, right? We've played the Sacramento Kings, who's, you know, borderline playoffs, could make it, could not make it. And we've played two teams who will probably make the playoffs. The Phoenix Suns, who are coming off a championship run, who are very good. And a Clippers team who's, you know, missing Kawhi Leonard, but still good, well-coached, have a star in Paul George, and will be in position to compete for a playoff spot. So how do you play against them? And I think we've played hard, but we haven't always played smart, and we've turned the ball over a lot. But I think that's to be expected when you're putting in new offense and new defense. But we got to be more sharp. In terms of early indicators for myself, I think what I've kind of looked at is, how does my wind feel? How does my conditioning feel? I know my body fat's low. My weight is in a really good spot. I got a great schedule in terms of working with, you know, Devin, my movement specialist, working with Todd, our strength coach for the Blazers, and working with, you know, Lady Jess, one of our PTs on staff, with Charles and the rest of our staff. I think I have a really good routine down now to where I feel comfortable that the work has been done. Now I just kind of show up and I'm able to get to spots. I don't really look at the makes and misses early in the season because they can kind of, you know, be up and down as you kind of find your rhythm. But I just look at, am I getting quality shots? Am I getting space? Am I getting separation? How does my body feel in the fourth quarter? Do I still have great balance? Am I still able to get into my ankles and my hips? And obviously, the results they've been there for me early in the season. I missed a couple shots I'd normally make, but as I said before, I'm just more so worried about the conditioning, how my legs feel, quality three-point attempts, and then just overall aggressive mentality, which is what I'm going to carry in every night. You know, not worried about who we're playing against. I have the mindset and mentality that I want to kill and destroy and be aggressive, you know, aggressively attacking and going at people, not only on offense, but also on defense. With all that said, we did get Chauncey's first victory at home over the Suns, and it was a really dope moment to see everything kind of come together for him. A lot of stuff we've been working on in practice, a lot of stuff we've worked on watching film and breakdowns. We finally executed it, and we executed it well in front of our home fans, and he was able to reap the benefits of that with his first victory and our first victory of the season. And we poured a bunch of water on him and kind of celebrated him. Gave him the game ball because I think this is a moment that he'll remember in what should be a long, long, successful coaching career after a very, very successful basketball career in which he had as a player. I think, you know, the game is the game, right? But there's, you know, all these little mental hurdles you go through and physical hurdles you go through in an 82-game season. And there's going to be great victories. There's going to be tough losses. There's going to be nights like yesterday where you lose by 30 and then you fly home and you don't land until 2:20 and you don't go to sleep till 3:30 and you have to get up and go through another day. Sometimes there's back-to-backs. It's just a lot, but you have to understand, as Melo would say, you got to stay mellow. You got to really stay even keel, not get too high with victories and great play, and not get too low with losses and poor performance, understanding that it's the body of work and the law of averages. You want to give yourself the best chance of winning every night, understanding that some nights teams are going to outperform you, they're going to play better, and they're going to have a better game plan. But it's just more about sustaining, you know, a really good positive mentality. And I think that's what we've kind of instilled, not only in our organization, but within our roster and our culture, teaching the young guys, you know, be consistent with your approach, be consistent with your work ethic, be consistent with, you know, your film study, weights, taking care of your body, getting your shots, getting to your spots, because you're building, you know, not only are you building a routine and you're building an understanding of how to get yourself mentally and physically ready for games, but you're building a reputation. And you never know how long your career is going to last. You never know how long you're going to be with a team, but you want to make sure you do everything in your power to maximize your situation in terms of putting yourself in a position to succeed. So that's been our mentality as we kind of instill work ethic and take pride in preparation, especially me as a player and as a guy who's, you know, built a reputation around the league as someone who works and is the ultimate professional. I've had a chance to watch a lot of games on League Pass, watch a lot of teams. I watch a lot of guys in the 13 draft, a lot of my friends on other teams. Obviously, you know, there's the big teams that you watch. You know, by big teams, I mean big market teams, you know, the Knicks, the Lakers, the Warriors, those types of teams. But I really enjoy watching the Hornets. I really enjoy watching the Bulls, seeing the roster they were able to construct. Specifically the Bulls, they're 4-0 right now. They got DeMar. They have the big fella. They got Lonzo Ball. They pick up Caruso and Zach LaVine, who's a monster, a guy who can get his shot whenever he feels like it and is an explosive athlete. They're off to a 4-0 start for the first time since the 96-97 season, and I've been impressed, although it's still early. I think they've shown that they have a lot to offer to the NBA, and they have a lot to offer to League Pass. For those of you that don't have it, I would suggest you check them out. They'll probably get some nationally televised games sooner than later. The Hornets have really been fun to watch. Obviously, they're led by the young Ball. He's getting into the lane. He's making plays. He's Showtime basketball. I told someone he reminds me of Magic Johnson. He's just fun to watch. He's infectious. And his teammates are always cutting and moving because they know they're going to be rewarded, not just with the pass aheads, but also in transition. He's dropping guys off, and he's not afraid. He'll hit big shots. He'll dress the same color as his Lamborghini truck. And he plays with a flair that many kids will definitely admire. The Warriors are the Warriors, right? They got Steph Curry. They got Draymond. Klay will be back at some point. Jordan Poole is playing extremely well, putting himself in position to potentially be most improved and or sixth man of the year if he gets enough games where he comes off the bench. Andre Iguodala was a huge, huge pickup for them. His versatility, his experience, all those things really matter. And I think he puts them in a position to be able to go small late in games where Draymond can play the five and they can basically switch everything. And he's just such a heady player who understands how to get Steph shots. He understands how to get the other players shots and has that credibility to where he can finish around the basket. He can make plays in a 3-on-2 if he's playing as a short roller. And he's going to hit big shots as a guy who has a finals MVP. Those are just some of my thoughts on teams I've enjoyed watching. Make sure you're following the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your shows. Hit us with a 5-star review, share with a friend, and tell that friend to tell a friend. Coming up next, I'll share my thoughts on the NBA's official top 75 of all time list and how myself and others are adjusting to the NBA's new rule changes.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The league changed its rules ahead of the 21-22 season in order to discourage offensive players from making overt, abrupt, or abnormal basketball moves. Examples include abnormal launch angle, veering off path, the leg kick, off-arm contact. And because of that, we have the lowest free throw attempts per game average in NBA history. For the first time, dipping below 20 free throw attempts per game. For all those old school NBA fans who talked about how our game is soft, it's not physical, it's just a bunch of guys jacking up three-pointers, get down in transition. It's easy for the offense to score now because the game is so much faster, there's so much more freedom. I just want to remind all those people out here that as a guy who's playing now and who admired the 90s, a lot of those things they say are true. But now, no one can argue the fact that for the first time in NBA history, teams are shooting less than 20 attempts per game, which is the lowest in NBA history, which means we're technically getting less free baskets than all those players in the 90s, 80s, and beyond. And I must agree, these changes have helped the game. I think it's a more pure form of basketball, similar to kind of the blacktop, where you can't call your own fouls on game point and make sure that you're putting yourself in a position to either get the ball back or shoot free throws. You have to really have skill. You have to really be able to create for yourself. And I think I'm enjoying this. I'm really enjoying watching and playing the game where there's not as many interruptions. There's not as many situations in which guys are able to just hunt for fouls, jumping back and picking rolls. Guys aren't able to grab arms. There's so many techniques that a lot of players have used, you know, the James Hardens of the world, the Trae Youngs of the world, who are great players in their own right, but have figured out how to manipulate the system, have figured out how to manipulate the referees, and have allowed themselves to get to the line at unbelievable rates. Harden, for instance, his scoring numbers are down. His free throws are down to start the season. He's averaged 10.2 free throw attempts per game from the 12-13 season through 2021. This year, he's averaging 3 free throw attempts per game. That's more like a CJ McCollum, a guy who doesn't get to the line much. I just used my name and myself in third person, but I thought it was appropriate. I don't get to the line a lot, and I think as a guy who's known as a scorer, who's a bona fide bucket getter, I don't really need free throws. I know it's good for the analytics and the player efficiency rating and stuff like that, but I can go score 30 with no free throws. So this hasn't really affected me because I don't hunt for fouls. I just try to get to it, and I train in a way in which it allows me to just get buckets, you know, middies, threes, get to the rim, hit floaters, score in transition, whatever the case may be. But this has really affected Trae Young as well. He's still a scorer and a guy who can get his team involved, but I've seen a lot of clips of guys, you know, coming off screens and jumping back, and it would normally be a foul, but now it's a play on, and it's kind of triggering, you know, more so of a fast break. And I think the consensus among players is that defenders love it. Defenders can be more aggressive. They can get into the ball because less fouls are being called. I can be more aggressive personally as a guy who's, you know, defending and trying to be aggressive on both ends. I think offensive guys aren't happy because they aren't getting free points. They aren't getting free trips to the line. The game has become a lot more physical. It's become a lot more free-flowing to where defenses are able to kind of dictate more than they have been in the past. And I think it's really good for the fans. A lot of fans are enjoying watching, you know, guys have to really create and really have to get to the line on their own merit. So I look forward to seeing how the refs continue to adjust, see how the NBA continues to adjust. I think it'll loosen up a bit, but right now it's a huge, huge point of emphasis. And you'll see guys kind of struggle because they played the game a certain way for so long. They have to kind of change that, and it takes time to adapt. But, you know, guys who are pure bucket getters, you know, the KDs of the world, you know, Kyrie, you know, if he's able to come back, Ja Morant, I think the list goes on and on. There's a lot of guys who just get buckets, and they can score at all three levels to where it doesn't really affect them. Brandon Ingram, another guy, he's getting to it. Steph Curry, he's moving constantly. And these are guys who are going to score regardless of if they get 3 free throw attempts, 0 free throw attempts, or 5. They're just very efficient in their movement and can get to it off the bounce. And I think that's the importance of the mid-range jumper, right? You got a lot of guys who can shoot threes, a lot of guys who can finish at the rim. But if the shot is off and you're not finishing at the rim because there's a lot of contact that's not being called, you have to be able to boogie, create space, and score in the mid-range game. So kids that are listening out there, it's important that you can shoot the three. It's important that you can get to the rim. But if you don't have a floater and a midi, and those types of situations, you will definitely struggle. The NBA recently released their top 75, well, 76 players, and they had the anniversary in which they talked about the 75 greatest players of all time with a list. I had a teammate and former teammate make that list, that being Dame and Melo, and I just want to talk about them for a second. I think it's really dope, first of all, to be playing alongside a guy who's still currently in his prime and is considered one of the 75 greatest players of all time. And I think it's really dope that I got to play alongside Melo, still friends with him till this day, a guy who's a sure Hall of Famer, first ballot, no question. It's top nine in NBA history in scoring, has hit big shot after big shot, but still works, you know, probably harder than a lot of rookies in this league. Takes care of his body, does all the little things, enjoys playing the game of basketball, is a league pass junkie. He's watching games. He's going to games. He's playing ones on off days. It's just a guy who really genuinely cares about basketball, so I'm not surprised he's in this position. In terms of Dame, I've been around him since 2013. His approach, his work ethic, you know, 2, 3, 4 workouts in a day, shooting in the morning, lifting in between, boxing, shooting at night, the film study. He's a league pass junkie. Guy's watching every game he can on a nightly basis, texting me about it. I think there's a reason why these types of players get these types of awards and show up when the game matters most, because it's a mentality, it's a work ethic, it's a mindset, but it's also a dedication. It's also the fact that they genuinely care and are usually generally good people. And I think for them, I'm happy to see them be honored in that way, happy to play alongside them and have played alongside Melo. And think the greatest separator is commitment, dedication, hard work, and loyalty, not just to the people around them, but to the game. When you're loyal to the game and you care about the game and you dedicate yourself and you're not afraid of the work and you're also not afraid to be criticized, generally good things are going to happen to you. And that's what's happened to these guys. And the rest of the players in this list, I'm sure the same can be said, that they've been dedicated. They've worked on their craft. They've expanded their games. They've taken care of their bodies. They've been on time. They've been coachable. They've done all these things. And now the reward at the end of the tunnel is not only success while they're playing, but being recognized when your career is over. And my thoughts on the list are that there are a lot of great players who have played this game and that some players had to be left off. I don't really have any problems with the players left off, because I know that the players that were snubbed will be on the top 100 or whatever comes after this. Notable players that were left off include Klay, Dwight Howard, D. Rose, Tony Parker, T-Mac, The Joker, Vince Carter, Pau Gasol, Joe Dumars. As a guard, I'm sad to see Joe Dumars not on the list. You know, a small school guy. I'm really sad to see T-Mac. I know him personally. Vince, know him personally. Pau, TP, Manu, D. Rose, Klay as well. But I think Dwight Howard is a guy who should have been on the list for sure, based on accolades, the fact that he won a championship, all defensive team, defensive player of the year multiple times, all NBA, all-star, multi-times. It just doesn't make sense that he wasn't on the list. But as the saying goes, everyone can't make it, so it's tough. I think based on his career with Orlando and his career with the Lakers, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. His statistics and accomplishments are greater than some of those who actually made the list. And I think when it's all said and done, he'll be more appreciated once he retires. And that's generally how it goes. You know, once you walk away from the game, people kind of go back and unpeel those layers and see, like, wow, this guy was really amazing. He really accomplished a lot of things, and we kind of took his game for granted. I think that's to be said about a lot of players. And I think the other question that we come up with is this list based on accolades, accomplishments as a team or individually or both? And what are they weighing most? Because a lot of these players are good in their own right, but also were winners. You know, D. Rose was the youngest MVP ever. Manu was a winner, a guy who sacrificed, came off the bench, but was a winner. He did a lot of different things. He revolutionized the game and is arguably one of the greatest European players to ever play in the NBA. Tony Parker was a winner, a guy who sacrificed. He, you know, kept the mid-range alive, had a floater, could get to the paint, did a lot of little things, but didn't necessarily put up gaudy individual stats, but was a great team player. So I think you have to figure out what the voters are valuing most. Is it individual accolades? Is it success from teams? Is it the combination? Because that will really determine who's being snubbed and who's not. Stay tuned, because coming up, we got the Lakers big men getting feisty. A little scuffle, per se, a little situation on the bench between two players. And then Miles Bridges is getting the dub and the L. Stay locked in.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Before we pull up her dish, I want to go on record saying that I called Mauro Ginobili European. He's actually Argentinian, from Argentina. So instead of the Euro step, we should call it the South American step. Lakers scuffle. Dwight and AD. AD and Dwight Howard had a verbal exchange on the bench during a timeout that could have turned physical had teammates not gotten involved. Both guys say they squashed it at halftime and that it doesn't need to be discussed anymore. I am dishing on this situation. I've been in a lot of confrontations with teammates over the course of my career that just haven't been documented. They haven't been on TV in prime time during a game. But I think emotions get high at times, especially when you're competing at the highest level, especially when you're losing. Things aren't going well. You tend to be a little bit more on edge, considering what the Lakers have at stake, a championship. They have all these veteran players. They're still trying to figure things out, and they were struggling. It happens. There's a lot of confrontations between teammates, staff members, those things alike. You just don't always see it. So I don't necessarily think it was a big deal. If they were 3-0 or 2-1 even, I don't think people would have been bringing it up. But the fact that the incident happened right after the top 75 players had been released, AD was actually on the list, Dwight Howard wasn't. So there's all this speculation about, is Dwight Howard mad about the list? Are they arguing about that? And jokes were kind of made. But I think that they're just both competitors who really want to win, and the emotions got the best of them. I think that they definitely will have handled it, you know, behind closed doors, which is how those incidents should be handled. And as the saying goes, you're going to have confrontations at times with coworkers. I'm sure everyone in America has had confrontations with coworkers to some extent, just probably not as physical because you're sitting at desks or cubicles or working from home on Zoom. So you can just kind of argue in the chats or the comments or whatever the case may be. But in our situation, we're physically seeing each other every day, competing against each other, practicing against each other, and then bringing everything together as a unit. So I think the Lakers, you know, should handle that in-house, as I'm sure they have. But two grown men arguing. I actually like the passion. You know, that means they care. You know, when you're literally physically ready to come to blows, that means you truly care about what's going on in the court. And that's what I want to be surrounded by, people who care about the game. I think just turning the page, looking at the actual Lakers team, I think they have a lot of good players. They just have to figure out how to use them in the rotations, and then also the injuries that they're facing with Trevor Ariza being out, THT, Talen Horton-Tucker being out, Kendrick Nunn being out, Wayne Ellington being out. They have all these players who are hurt, so the rotation is having to shift a little bit. Obviously, the addition of Russell Westbrook, they add Carmelo Anthony. They have all of these players, all this talent. They just have to figure out how to play together off of each other and how to maximize that talent. I think it's going to take some time. There's going to be some great moments and great nights, and there's going to be nights where they struggle, which is all a part of the NBA season. But I think they're playing the long game, and hopefully, you know, they're able to kind of figure things out. But I think so far they've just kind of struggled with spacing. They struggle with rotations defensively, and they got a nice win where Melo played extremely well the other night against a young Memphis team who was on a back-to-back. But sometimes you have to win ugly. It still counts down the stretch of the season. Get the dub, take the L. The dub of the week is definitely Miles Bridges. He's averaging 25 points per game after four games. The last two seasons, he's averaged about 13, and the Hornets are 3-1, coming off an overtime loss to the Boston Celtics, in which Miles dunked on someone, but also was dunked on. I think the league is in a great, great spot with young talent. So many young, athletic, well-rounded basketball players are here on Earth. And I think we're at the apex of basketball, to where you have a lot of veterans, a lot of Hall of Famers, mixed with a lot of young superstars and potential stars who will be the faces of the league for a very, very long time. I think it's early, but Bridges is my pick for MIP based on how he's playing, getting up and down the court. He's dunking. He's in a contract year. He's going to get a massive, massive extension. He plays well alongside Ball. He can shoot the three well. He's got a midi. He's got a handle. He's like the perfect new era NBA four man. And I don't see why he won't average 20 points per game with that athleticism and skill set. So he's in for a big payday. He's in for a great season, and the bag is coming. I don't know what the ceiling is for a guy like that with that much athleticism and ability to play kind of like mid-post. He can score off the bounce. He can ISO. He shoots catch and shoot. He shoots off the dribble. He's a lob threat on screening and rolling. The ceiling is the roof, as Michael Jordan would say. He can become as good as he wants to become with that skill set. The L of the week, Jokic, Anthony Edwards, Kelly Olynyk, and also Miles Bridges, ironically. Jokic was posterized by Lauri Markkanen last night on the fast break. It was a nasty dunk. Edwards was dunked on by Brandon Ingram last night. Olynyk was jumped over on a lob, actually. That was nasty. That John Collins dunk. He's one of the most explosive players I've seen in a game. And then Jaylen Brown, a happy belated birthday, Jaylen. He dunked on Bridges last night. And Bridges also dunked on their whole team at one point throughout the game. But I just think it's crazy that all these athletic plays are happening at once. There's just so many athletes in the NBA. The game is faster, pace, it's transition. And I think the best posters are the ones where both players jump, right? Like the charge poster is cool and all, but I like to see the defender jump and the offensive guy just jump higher than him, put his whole arm in the rim, and then the celebrations afterwards are usually great. And I like how the refs have allowed guys to celebrate. You know, when you dunk on someone, there's got to be a crazy adrenaline rush. As a guy who doesn't really dunk on players very often, I can imagine the adrenaline rush that I would feel after dunking, and I'd probably get a technical. But I have been dunked on before by multiple players in this league. It doesn't really feel like anything, right? As a defender, your job is to compete. And sometimes you got to go and rotate in the charge, or sometimes you jump. My high school teammate Colston dunked on me a few years ago on TV. I was the rotation guy on the backside. I was late and I just jumped and he dunked on me and won. And I've also been dunked on by other players, but it just happens. It's a part of the game. I think when you rotate over, you decide three things. Do I take a charge? Do I foul? Or do I jump to try to block it and then foul? Those are the three options. And generally, you kind of do whatever comes naturally. Now I'm more of a foul guy because I don't have time to be trying to jump with these world-class athletes. But you know how that goes, generally. Cue the Y music, please. This is one of my favorite parts of the Pull Up Pod. It's the wine segment. But before we do that, I want to recognize NBC. NBC recently wrote an article about how NBA players are helping drive diversity in the wine industry. And they focused on, you know, myself and my wife talking about ownership and advocacy and what we were able to kind of accomplish so far and what we're looking to accomplish in the wine space, having purchased 318 acres in the Carlton AVA. We're definitely looking forward to building out a vineyard and continuing to figure out ways to add diversity to this space to make it more approachable to all people, specifically, you know, blacks and minorities, understanding that only 2% of people, you know, black people are known as industry professionals in the wine space, and less than 1% own wineries. So there's just a lot of room for growth. There's a lot of room for us to continue to figure out ways to help build up this wine space, because obviously the more diverse it is, the better product you're going to get, and also the more revenue people will be able to generate when people from all walks of life are purchasing wine, enjoying wine, talking about wine, and involved in the process from start to finish, including manufacturing wine. I want to talk about the wine that I most recently had. I've been not drinking very often because my wife is pregnant, and I'm kind of like on this like cleanse thing I'm doing, where it's just basically water, smoothies, tea, and the occasional orange juice. But recently had the Beaufrère Special. It was a 2014 Beaufrère. I think it was Ribbon Ridge, and I definitely really, really, really enjoyed it. It's among the top 1% of all wines in the world. It is an Oregon wine, more light than bold, more smooth than tannic, more dry than sweet, higher acidity, but there was hints of cherry, strawberry, raspberry, a little bit of oak and vanilla. Beaufrère is one of my favorite vineyards in the valley. I really, really do enjoy it. It's medium-bodied, and you can pair it with veal, beef, game, deer, and poultry, or as the saying goes, you can drink it with anything. It's 100% Pinot Noir grapes, and I am a huge, huge fan. Would highly, highly recommend you guys checking that out. It's about $90, depending on where you get it from. Could be $95, but I highly recommend it, depending on how much you want to spend. As always, I want to thank you guys for checking in this week. Be sure to follow the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your shows. Tell a friend to tell a friend, and hit the show on social at Pull Up Pod on Twitter and Instagram. We're always posting fresh content there all season long. And as the saying goes, don't forget to
pull up.